Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Objective. Today it's day 158 of the war in Israel. Daniel, and today joining me is Mark Pellegrino. Hey Mark, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I will be doing much better once we hear the confirmation. So basically what has been happening is there's been, and actually I have a footage, maybe I can play it in the background. I mean, you cannot see much from it. So yeah, you can see it here. There's been an airstrike on a this compound, and basically it is believed that Marman, let me get his name, Marwan Issa, was basically in the basement. We are still waiting for a confirmation if this was actually done. So we can we'll talk a little bit about who is, what would this assassination mean, and we'll talk about Hamas leaders broadly a bit, and also about countries harboring these terrorists. But Mark, have you heard about Marwan Issa before, and what do you think about this story?
I don't know the top leadership of Hamas. So the first time I heard about this particular character, who's the number three guy in Hamas.
So. It's hard to say what exactly, because technically he's like a right-hand man to Ismail Haniyeh, who is the chairman of the political bureau. He's also really he's very integral in basically connecting different leaders. He's this sort of plasma, connecting all of Hamas leaders together, and as well he's like a strategic leader. So he was. As all these leaders, he played a major role in the October 7th attacks.
Yeah, so he's like a Heydrich, a Himmler, a Goebbels, a Hermann Hesse. Any of those interchangeable characters underneath Hitler were all in the top brass of the Nazi party and had a great deal of influence. So I would say if he is confirmed DOA at that compound, it is a good day for not only the world and Israel, but for Palestinians as well. They may not know this, and their supporters may not know this, but that ideology has to be totally repudiated in the eyes of the world, and particularly in the eyes of the pro-Gaza supporters. So the sooner we get after these creepy, murderous thugs and kill them, send them to Allah, the better for the world.
Yeah, and something you've mentioned before, we went live. This compound that was attacked was the Nuseirat refugee camp. Lo and behold, another Hamas leader is hiding right under a refugee camp, as we heard from about also Yihya Sinwar, who was hiding in the basically basement either of Khan Yunis or later Rafah, which currently holds the most basically Palestinian refugees. So we see again, they are not afraid to use human shields, they are not afraid to hide, and they will use this as an opportunity to again, Israel has attacked a refugee camp. I can already see how many people will jump on, Israel striking a refugee camp. Again, ignoring the fact that it's only because these terrorists do use these refugee camps as a hidden spot, or hospitals, or schools.
Yeah, the truth doesn't matter to the pro-Gaza crowd. What matters to them is headlines and sound bites. And Israel attacks another refugee camp is a very good sound bite. It's a very good headline. And since the majority of their followers are concrete bound and aren't really interested in delving beneath the headlines to see how much truth there is to that, they don't care about the context. They just care about going along with the horde. Those headlines and those sound bites will have purchase for lots and lots and lots of people. And the people who comment on those headlines, add in context that, well, the number three man in Hamas happened to be hiding in a basement underneath that refugee camp. They get lost in the conversation. And well, I can't say conversation, in the flow, in the deluge of pro-Palestinian morons. So they know what they're doing on social media. you post fake, post anything that agitates people and gets them worked up, and the feed will just be flooded with reactions.
Yeah, I've already seen some people faking the polls that Netanyahu has confirmed that the assassination was not successful. But as I said, at least as of right now, we still don't have a confirmation. So before we, I'm wondering which order. So let's just give you like a top five of Hamas and do a quick run up of them. I have like a little bit about all of them, and there's also something to talk about in all of them. So, there's the main person, the chairman of the political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh. He's the person who is living in Qatar, so he's not even residing. I think he's been living in Qatar since 2000, I think 19, 18, 19, something like that, and has basically been ruling from there. And something interesting about them. So I found there was an opinion poll, comparing, basically asking people what do they think about Ismail Haniyeh compared to Mahmoud Abbas. For those who don't know, Mahmoud Abbas is the leader of the. It's hard because there's so many things, but technically, I think Palestinian Authority would be what you would say. And so basically. So there is before October 7th and after October 7th. So in the West Bank, before October 7th, it was 50-50. So even people in the West Bank, 50% of them preferred the leader of Hamas or of Gaza. After October 7th, it went to 85-15 in favor of Ismail Haniyeh. So after October 7th, much more people preferred. Basically the guy who was behind October 7th. In the Gaza Strip, it went from 60 to 40 in favor of Ismail to 70 to 30. So even in Gaza, he actually got a boost in opinion after October 7 attacks.
Yeah,
What do you
but
think about?
let's be careful about who the enemy is, Daniel. It's Hamas, not the Palestinian people, so they say. Well, when you get figures like that, 70% in Gaza, 85% of the people in the West Bank supporting the means and the ends of Hamas, you have to conclude that the society itself is pathological, like the Nazis and the Japanese imperialists before them, and that there is no way to simply surgically remove Hamas from the society and defeat the problem. The problem is ideological, and it has to be a complete and thorough takedown of the ideology to the point that the Palestinian people themselves understand that violence is only going to lead to death and destruction and starvation, and that they must pursue other avenues if they still wish to pursue the course of a quote unquote Palestinian state, or be absorbed into Israel and live as citizens in an Israeli state. They're going to have to renounce violence entirely. And until that happens, the violence has to continue. It simply has to. And it's their fault.
Yeah, and I think there was another poll that if there was an election today, it's not like there's going to be an election in Gaza or they like democracy so much they had enough with just one election. That was enough for them. But basically, if there was an election, Hamas would win. So it's clear that yeah, Palestinian people do want more October 7th, do want more violence. I mean, in the reality show, we'll be talking about this documentary that came out basically interviewing people in the West Bank. And yeah, when you hear talking about them, some might say, yeah, we don't like the civilian deaths, but we were oppressed for much longer. Or the comparative suffering was like 1%. Like October 7 attack was 1% of the Jewish suffering compared to the Palestinian suffering. So even people on the streets do hold opinions like this. And with such opinions, yeah, there's whenever people talk about this two-state solution, I mean, you need someone to negotiate it with. Who are you going to negotiate it with? None of the, it's not like Hamas wants a two-state solution. And Yeah, it's not like the more moderate Palestinian Authority, who Mahmoud Abbas even celebrated the October 7 attacks. It's not like they are eager to negotiate it for anything like this either. It really seems like, yeah, not just the leadership, the Palestinian people want to fight, want to see more of fighting, want to see more of, dead Jews, and that's their goal, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, their goal is in lockstep with the socialists and communists of the world who are exploiting this conflict to attempt to overturn Western capitalism and Western civilization. It's a global anti-West movement that's capitalizing on altruism to guilt the powerful defenders into surrendering. And I hope that doesn't happen because the will of the Palestinian people to fight has to be broken. And there's only one way to do it. And they've set this situation up themselves. This wasn't mysteriously set up by Netanyahu and his cabinet. Everybody on social media who supports the Palestinians attempts to claim that Netanyahu not only set up Hamas to be the power, but did it deliberately because he wanted a wedge. Between in the two-state solution. He wanted problems. He wanted chaos. Nonsense. Hamas was forced onto Israel. Israel didn't want Hamas in there. They knew the trouble that that would bring to the world. And yes, the
Yeah,
West
and
is.
just quickly, because people often bring up this point, but imagine if Netanyahu stopped this money from going in, everyone would have an outcry. Israel is stopping humanitarian aid going in, is stopping Gaza from developing. And
Yeah, altruism leaves you in a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. That's why you have to completely abandon it as an ethical system and go with rational egoism. A country can do that, Netanyahu can do that, and would be infinitely more powerful than his stance now, which is we have to eradicate Hamas while doing it surgically, like a laser beam within the network of the Palestinian people, but the Palestinian people themselves are the problem. This is a war of cultures. And the Palestinian culture is one of pan-Arab dominance over everyone else in the region. It has nothing to do with liberation, nothing to do with freedom. You don't elect Hamas if you're a liberation movement. You elect Hamas if you want to murder people and take things. And that's what they want to do. And I don't let people on social media get away with with attempting to steal the moral high ground by claiming it's a liberation movement. It's not a liberation movement.
So let's quickly run down more people. So we have the deputy chairman, Saleh Al Aruri. I should really like learn Arabic so I can like pronounce these names correctly, or just a little bit of Arabic. So this was the one other person that was assassinated, or I should say that was killed in Lebanon. I believe IDF hasn't actually confirmed if it was them or not, but he was killed in an airstrike in Lebanon. So this is the one attack we've seen that was outside of Israel, although it was in a country that, well, the country technically isn't at war with Israel, but Hezbollah that was controlling the south of Lebanon definitely is. So something about him is, of course, he's someone who was previously captured and then released. And what else do I have about him? So that's basically it. But again, we see someone similar to Yahya Sinwar, who I can mention, someone that was captured. Specifically with Yahya Sinwar, he was, I believe, ill, where he would otherwise die, but the IDF treated him and then released him just so he could go on.
Look how morally perverse that is. Look what altruism does to people. Love your enemy, Jesus tells us, more or less summing up, concretizing the altruist ethics, so that the IDF treats their enemy, their mortal enemy, not just an enemy, not just somebody who doesn't agree with them, but somebody who wants them dead, treats him so that he can survive to murder another day, which in fact he did. So he's with Allah, let's hope. Well, I don't
Oh,
think he's
well,
with that team,
Saleh
but.
is dead. Yassin Var, I believe we don't really know where he is. Last time we heard about it, he was supposed to be in Rafah. I think they were told. I think they were. I think I saw something about like his family escaping to Egypt, but I don't think it was confirmed if he escaped. Then we can go to military commander Mohammed Deif. I believe the deputy military commander works like right under him, basically, and something about him. So he's on top of Israel's most wanted list since 1995. Surprisingly, he survived more than or at least seven assassination attempts. So they call him the cat with nine lives, which actually reminds me. Because also the Marwan Issa, who we started talking about today, his nickname is Shadow Man. We should really stop giving like cool nicknames to like known terrorists. I don't think it like, I don't think it helps our cause if we like make them, you know, wow, they are so cool. It reminds me of I think there's like a similar thing about what's his name, Fidel Castro, who the CIA tried to assassinate multiple times but has never achieved it. And yeah, so Mohammed,
The good news is with respect to the cat with nine lives, he's used up seven of them, so he's got two more to go. He's on the short list.
hopefully so. So let me just quickly thank the super chatters. So we have a super chat from Bonnie and a super chat from Daniel. Thank you so much. There was something else I wanted to bring up, and I completely lost it now. So do you have anything to say before we go on to different countries who harbor these terrorists?
You cannot kill these sons of bitches fast enough for me. My only preference would be that it's not anonymous at the bottom of a compound somewhere where they have to dig out through the rubble and DNA test the remains to make sure that they're the guy. I would prefer it to be public and brutal and humiliating.
So yeah, and something that I think I heard it about Mohammed Daif. I think he's someone who is fairly. I think both of them are like not really are showing themselves to public. I think with Marwan Issa, we only have like a couple of pictures of him even. But besides that, beside them never appearing in public, they are hugely popular, mainly because of their hardline stances against Israel. I think I remember one more thing. I think this is again about Mohammed Deif. He's referred to in Arabic as a guest because he spends like every night in a different house just so Israel doesn't catch him. All right,
Well,
yeah.
it perfectly illustrates the kind of life you have to lead when you declare war on reality, right? You are running from reality all the time. So the good news is a guy like that has to be paranoid. He has to live in constant fear that the hammer is going to fall on him, and let's hope it falls on him sooner rather than later.
Talking about the people who don't have to live in fear because the countries protect them, let's talk a little bit about Turkey and Qatar, both of them. Qatar, who hosts the leader of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, and Turkey, who I believe on October 7 actually hosted Ismail Haniyeh or different Hamas leaders, and I think even after October 7 attacks, there were times where there were some Hamas leaders in Turkey. Couple quotes from Erdogan, the Turkish president. He said Hamas is not a terrorist organization, and also that Netanyahu is a Hitler Stalin. And also according to Shin Bet, which is a Israel security agency, Hamas has established a command post in Turkey, basically used for recruiting. One more thing about Qatar. Qatar has transferred more than 1.8 billion to Hamas. So both of these countries play a huge role in supporting Hamas. What do you think should we do about this, Mark?
Well, first of all, unfortunately, America plays a huge role in supporting Hamas, and many of the European countries play a huge role in supporting Hamas. Again, that's that paradoxical altruism that makes you act at cross purposes to your own life. As far as countries harboring these mass murdering criminals and tyrants, Turkey should be immediately expelled from NATO. We have to stop giving them weapons. I think we just recently shipped like F-16s over there, new modern updated F-16s, which they should not have and do not deserve. Let them go to Russia. Let them ally with the pond scum that is North Korea, Iran, and Russia. There's nothing to fear from these fools. And then send the Mossad in there to kill these terrorists. With Qatar, I think we should cut off their source of income. Is that oil? If it's oil, we should tell them if they don't turn over these terrorists immediately, we're going to take out their oil fields completely and let them suffer the consequences of that. That's because that's an act of war to harbor a war criminal, a tyrant from another country. It's an act of war against the other nations, and all of NATO should economically boycott Qatar and join in on blowing up their capacity to pump oil and keep money going to their sheiks.
So something that I was thinking about that's very problematic with both Turkey and Qatar, let's say Israel tried to, Mossad tried to actually assassinate these Hamas leaders in either Qatar or Turkey, which I'm wondering if that was one of the reasons why they haven't admitted to assassinating the person in Lebanon, the Saleh al-Aruri in Lebanon. Is what would happen if this actually happened? I mean, Turkey is NATO, Qatar is a major ally of NATO. What would happen? And this is why I think it's problematic to have these countries as allies. I mean, that's a problem of the US foreign policy for decades now. I
It's
mean,
the problem. It's the problem with the UN. You can't have fundamentally incompatible government organizations. And what I mean incompatible is they have completely different, completely opposite perspectives of the relationship of the state and the people. You can't compromise with those folks because they win in the compromise, and the decent, free, basically free democratic states lose. They lose by association. So you can't compromise with them. They shouldn't be friends with NATO. They should be friends with their authoritarian neighbors and like-minded tyrants. And they shouldn't have access to what the free world provides, which is innovation and wealth. It's none of their business unless they want to come into the 21st century.
yeah, and as I said, that's a huge problem of the US foreign diplomacy in the past. My favorite example is with Ronald Reagan, where we had to fight against the atheist Soviet Union, so we had to support the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. And you could probably come up with many examples like this where we supported really bad sides just because the other side we perceive them as much worse.
Yeah, so the enemy of your enemy is not necessarily your friend. It's not a good maxim to live or rule by. You should get as close to people who identify with your principles as possible. And those who are the opposite, surely Qatar is the opposite, Saudi Arabia is the opposite. Every state in the Middle East, with the exception of Israel, is the opposite. They shouldn't be engaged with or allied to anybody who is in NATO.
And of so yeah, United States should definitely support Israel to the best extent they can. It's really sad. I think even today I saw there's a group of Democrat senators, I think Bernie Sanders among them, basically calling for U.S. stopping support, stopping the U.S. support for Israel, and quoting that it's in breach of some law because Israel doesn't allow humanitarian aid in.
You can't, I mean, you can't make this shit up. It's so wildly irrational. If an alien being with a sense of the common, a common sense, were to land here on this planet and see what these politicians and pundits are, I think, are moral actions, I think they would immediately turn around and leave. They would see this as a very dangerous place to be. I mean, it's insane. Sanders is insane. The Democrats are insane, literally insane.
It really looks like Israel will be the major decider for the next president of the United States, who as of right now really looks like it's gonna be Trump, mainly because the Democrats perceive Biden as too supporting of Israel,
But, and it's the most morally consistent wing of the Democratic Party, the socialists, who come off as morally superior, not as pragmatists, not as compromisers. They're drawing a hard line in the sand, and the only way you could beat that hard line in the sand is to oppose it completely and provide the other hard line that's better and more rational, and don't move.
Okay, I think that was pretty much everything I wanted to talk about today. So yeah, just to summarize, when it comes to these terrorists, Israel has to be able to go after them. At the end of the day, Hamas, it's not just the people. The people play the big part, and once Israel manages to go into Rafah and eliminate any remnants of Hamas militants, I think that will be great start. But we've already seen that a lot of these Hamas leaders can, or Palestinian leaders can, go into some other countries for a while and then return back. And as long as they're alive, there's always going to be an issue for Israel. So something the West can do is stop supporting these countries that, as we said, harbor these terrorists, such as Turkey and Qatar. So, Mark, anything before we go?
Yeah, the leadership of Hamas needs to die. They need to not be on this planet anymore. And the Palestinian people need to understand that pursuing this violence, which they've been doing in perpetuity since the beginning of before the beginning of Israel, but even more so since the 60s, when they actually found a way of packaging their cause that works for academia and pundits. They need to understand that that is a bad way to go. It leads to disaster, and they will never do it again. And until they admit that, until they renounce violence, you have to continue. You have to continue until they say, "Uncle, I quit. I surrender. I will do whatever you want," which is given to an occupation and have constitutional democratic norms rammed down their throat.
So I just checked. It's we still don't know if Marwan is. We still don't have the confirmation if it's that. So unfortunately, you haven't found out in today's show. We have the reality show coming up. I'll be watching the news and hopefully I'll be able to announce it during that. And for those people who say, this is just Hamas, the Palestinian people want peace. Well, we will be talking about what the Palestinian people want. There's been a documentary made in West Bank, a bunch of interviews. We'll see. Well, what do the Palestinian people actually want? I think
I
the
think, look, I think we know. They helped to install 250 miles of tunnels in an area about a quarter the size of Manhattan. That is a tremendous
well, this
engineer.
is West Bank, so just.
Okay, so the West Bank, according to polls, feels this even more passionately about Hamas than the Gazans do. But
When you don't
just
have to deal with consequences, it's much easier to support it.
Indeed, but people are still complaining that Gazans are being killed when you don't get 250 miles of underground tunnels and command centers without the complicity of the civilian population around you.
The link for the reality show is in the chat. We'll see you there in just about a minute. Thank you, Mark, for joining me today. Thank you, everyone, and bye bye.